Ladies and gentlemen, I'll call the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission meeting to order for February 12, 2013. It is approximately 2:30 p.m. We are in room 413 of the Capitol Building in Pierce, South Dakota. First, we will check the phone lines. Commissioner Feagin?
Here.
Mishach Rhodes?
I am here.
Lee Magnuson?
Yes, thank you.
Brett Ferenchak? Mr. Ferenchak? Adam Shoemaker?
Here.
Mr. Frappier?
Ms. Frappier, I'm here.
Ms., excuse me.
No, that's not quite all right.
Andrew Moranska?
Yeah, present, thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else on the telephone lines this morning?
Jim Smith, also representing Nexus Communications.
Representing Nexus?
Yes. Along with Ms. Brappier and Mr. Shoemaker.
Thank you. We will get started then. Well, my name is Gary Hansen. I'm acting as chairman for this meeting. Commissioner Chris Nelson is with me, and Commissioner Christy Feagin is on the telephone with us this morning. The agenda of the commission meeting will begin with the administration approval of the minutes of the commission meeting held on January 15th, 2013, and January 30th, 2013, and the ad hoc commission meeting held on January 22nd, 2013. Is there a motion?
I move to approve the minutes from the January 15th, January 30th, and January 22nd meetings.
Thank you. Commissioner Feagin?
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. Consumer reports. Ms. Gregg.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. The commission received a total of 73 contacts since the last report was prepared for the January 30th, 2013 commission meeting. 18 of the contacts involved telecommunication service, 17 of the contacts involved electric service, 3 contacts involved natural gas service, 6 contacts involved cell phone service, 13 contacts related to the Do Not Call registry, and 16 contacts were related to issues not regulated by the PUC. Happy report, all the complaints in 2012 have now been resolved, and 215 of the 234 complaints received in 2013 have been resolved.
100% for 2012. That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Any questions from the commissioners? The next item on the agenda is under electricity, EL 12-061, in the matter of the application of Black Hills Power Incorporated for authority to increase its electric rates. The question before the commission is, today shall the commission grant intervention to any parties that may have filed? We have parties that have filed, and I think what I'll do is first hear from I'll hear from Black Hills Power and then give the interveners an opportunity. Black Hills Power?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. This is Lee Magnuson representing Black Hills Power. There are two separate petitions to intervene that are before the commission today. The first that I will address is the petition to intervene filed on January 29th, 2013 by Walmart Stores, Inc. and Sam's West, Inc. As noted in our response to intervention petitions that was filed yesterday, we have no objection to the petition to intervene filed by Walmart Stores, Inc. and Sam's West, Inc. The second petition to intervene was filed by Regency Midwest Ventures Limited Partnerships and Deadwood Resort, LLC. That was filed on January 28, 2013. I would refer the commission to the Black Hills Power, Inc.'s response to intervention petitions. As set forth in that response, we do object to the petition to intervene of Regency Midwest and Deadwood Resort on the basis that in South Dakota, as with the overwhelming majority of jurisdictions, corporations must be represented by a licensed attorney in legal proceedings, and there is nothing in the petition filed by Regency Midwest and Deadwood Resort indicating that they are, in fact, represented by an attorney. So on that basis and for the other reasons set forth in our response, we would object to the intervention petition of Regency Midwest and Deadwood Resort.
Thank you. I'm going to assume that Walmart and Sam's aren't going to be, unless they feel compelled to speak, certainly they may, but I would like to hear from Regency Midwest Ventures and Deadwood Resort, LLC, in response to the concerns that have been expressed by Black Hills Power. Are you represented? I see if you might have your mute on. Oh, that's right. Walmart is. I was looking at Walmart and Mr.
Yes, this is Meshach Rhodes. I represent Walmart. And we, of course, given that there is no objection and we respect the commission's time here, we, of course, defer and just refer you to our motions.
And Mr. Andrew Maranska, are you to whom are you representing?
Mr. Chair, Commissioners, I'm here just to monitor today's proceeding. I, as the Commission may recall, represent the Black Hills Industrial Interveners Group. Regency is not a member of that group, and so I was having a bit of trouble with the with my own computer system this afternoon, and so was called in as opposed to just listening online, but I have no comments to make.
All right. Thank you very much. So, so I'll turn to staff. Since there's no representation for them.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer of staff, and I have been in contact with Regency a couple of times. They were looking for an attorney and found out yesterday the one they were looking didn't work out. But I have not heard back from them today. I called them again about 1:30 to see if they were going to be on the phone, but I did not hear back from them. Based on that, I would recommend the commission grant the intervention of Walmart Stores, Inc. and Sam's West, Inc. As to Regency Midwest Ventures Limited Partnerships and Deadwood Resort, you could do one of two things, I believe. You could defer it. Intervention isn't up until February 28th. You could defer it at this time, or you could deny without prejudice. Either way, they will need an attorney to file the appropriate paperwork.
Thank you. At this juncture, I'd hear from commission members if they have any questions. Hearing none, is there a motion?
I would move in EL 12-061 that we grant intervention to Walmart Stores, Inc. and Sam's West, Inc. and deny intervention without prejudice for Regency Midwest Ventures Limited Partnerships and Deadwood Resort, LLC.
Is there any discussion on the motion?
I would prefer, Commissioner Hansen, if I may speak, to defer the Regency Midwest Ventures Deadwood Resort until our next meeting on February 26th. Because there's still two more days of the intervention, so just to give them an opportunity to actually defer it, and then if nothing happens, then do not grant it. I'd rather grant one and defer one.
Thank you. Further discussion, I will can treat that as a substitute motion, or unless the maker of the motion wishes.
I'll just take that as a friendly amendment. I'm fine with that.
All right. Thank you. Then any further discussion on the motion? If not, on the motion to defer, and to grant, it's to grant Walmart and Sam's, to defer Regency Midwest and Deadwood. Commissioner Feagin.
Commissioner Feagin votes aye on the amendment and motion.
Thank you. Commissioner Nelson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen votes aye. The motion carries. On docket EL 13-001, in the matter of the request for approval of an electric service territory boundary agreement between Northwestern Corporation doing business as Northwestern Energy and West Central Cooperative Incorporated, the question before the commission is, shall the commission approve the proposed electric service territory boundary agreements? First up is Ms. Edwards. Are you first up? Or Mr. Tisdall?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This filing is part of the GIS mapping project to verify all South Dakota Electric Service territory boundaries for input into the ArcMap software. And though neither company is on the phone today, staff does appreciate them working with us to come to this agreement. So we would just recommend approval.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the commission on this item? Questions by commissioners? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, in EL-13-001, move that the commission approve the proposed electric service territory boundary agreement.
Thank you. Is there a discussion on the motion? Hearing none, Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson.
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. Under telecommunications, the first docket before us is TC-12-111 in the matter of the filing by Neutral Tandem, South Dakota LLC, for approval of revisions to its tariff number one. Question before the commission is, shall the commission approve the tariff revisions? Neutral Tandem is not on the line. Are they represented? They are not. Staff, Mr. Jacobson.
Thank you, Chairman. Due to the lateness of some information that came in from the applicant, we would recommend that this be deferred until the next meeting.
Thank you. Any questions by commissioners? Move for deferral of TC-12-111 till the next PUC commission meeting. Any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Fegan. Excuse me, Commissioner Fegan.
Thought you were doing that on your own, and I had you on mute. Fegan votes aye.
Thank you. Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. The second telecommunications docket on today's agenda is TC-12-191 in the matter of the filing for approval of transfer of certificate of authority from 360 Networks USA Incorporated to Zayo Group LLC. The question before the commission is, shall the commission approve the transfer of certificate of authority? Mr. Jacobson, are you first up on this one?
I believe the company is represented on the phone.
Mr. Chairman, this is Brett Ferencek at Bingham McCutcheon on behalf of 360 Networks USA and Zayo Group. Filed our petition seeking to transfer the certificate of 360 Networks to Zayo Group, and you know, are available for any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Mr. Jacobson.
Thank you, Chairman. This request for transfer involves both a local certificate of authority and an inter-exchange certificate of authority. Staff would just note that in the order in docket TC-06063, which granted the local certificate of authority for this company, there was particular language in that docket. SDTA intervened, and apparently the parties got together and negotiated certain restrictions and conditions which were included in the order in TC-06063. SDTA did not intervene in this docket. I guess the commission has an option of where they carry forward the terms and conditions that were included in that previous docket, or whether to just grant the transfer subject to rural safeguards, which also addresses many of the same items that were in the restrictions. Either way, staff would initially propose that the commission just approve with rural safeguards, but we certainly wouldn't object if the terms and conditions that were in the order TC-06063 were included in this docket too.
Thank you. Are there questions by the commissioners? Commissioner Nelson.
Mr. Jacobson, can you give me any idea what the difference might be between the two?
The restrictions included in the order in TC-06063 and these will sound familiar, were restrictions from providing retail end-user services and limiting the applicant to the provisioning of wholesale services to other telecommunications carriers only.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Is there a motion? Commissioner Nelson?
I would move in TC 12-0191 that the Commission approve the transfer of the Certificate of Authority from 360 Networks USA Inc. to Zayo Group LLC and include the conditions as agreed to in the 06-063 docket.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion? Commissioner Fegan?
Commissioner Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. The motion carries. TC 13-001 in the matter of the application of Nexus Communications Incorporated for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier. Question before the commission is, today shall the commission grant waiver of ARSD 2010-3243 subsection 2 and designate Nexus Communications Incorporated and ETC for the designated service area for purposes of receiving federal Lifeline Universal Service support. Mr. Kenneke.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, and staff. Brett Kenneke for Nexus Communications. I've also with me on the telephone are Jim Smith, Danielle Frappier, and Adam Shoemaker from Washington, D.C. Last meeting, I was here with a the request to have our petition granted. You gave me several questions, which I got certainly help from my people on the telephone. We put together answers to those and filed them. I hope they're satisfactory. We are here to discuss the petition this afternoon and seek your approval of it. So we'll look forward to engaging in that discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Does staff have anything to add at this time? Mr. Stephenson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pat Stephenson of staff. Staff has reviewed the application and all the responses to the data requests. While their business model does appear to be heavily reliant on government funds, and I share the similar concerns about the business model, Nexus has complied with all the requirements set forth in the state and federal rules. Therefore, Nexus qualifies for designation as an ETC, and staff recommends the commission grant a waiver of 20:10:32:43-02 and approve Nexus's application for ETC designation. Thank you.
Thank you. I would have one question to start us off for anyone from Nexus, and that is, did Nexus serve a copy of its petition to stand on Standing Rock Telecommunications?
Commissioner, that's a question for me, and I will consult my files, if you'll just give me a second. Commissioner, I did not. I served it on the list as I understood it to be from the commission. And that included 11 people with agencies. I did not serve it on Standing Rock.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. Further questions from commission?
Yeah, I think part of the problem is that when I look at the list of wire centers and then at the map that was previously filed with the petition, it appears that you added a number of exchanges that were not on the map.
That was not our intent to add additional exchanges. The intent was that the map would reflect the same number of exchanges and the exact exchanges provided on the list.
Well, when you look at your map, I mean, there's no shaded area where Timberlake, Morristown, McIntosh, and when I look at your wire centers, you've included them. And then there are other areas that I didn't actually see on your map, though it was hard to read to begin with, but like Flandre Exchange, Chamberlain, Miller, I didn't see any of those shaded either.
So the to serve the non-rural portions of the Quest areas, and coming up with precise maps is often a challenging exercise, but the way Nexus determines if someone resides in their service area is based on the person's address and not by referencing a map.
So you did mean to add exchanges that were not previously on your map?
No.
So which one are you want to go by?
The Quest Non-Rural Rate Centers, actually on the, I don't know if you're looking at a color version of the map, but it would be the pink areas on the map.
I don't have a colored version, and I don't know if that is part of the problem in that I'm not sure which areas are shaded, but it just didn't appear that any of the areas that I have mentioned, you know, were in the shaded areas.
So having a color version would actually help you to see that the proposed or the areas that we are proposing to serve are colored in.
The problem may be that if you don't color version of the map, there is in green a demarcation of other ILAC non-rural rate centers, but we are not requesting authority for those. We are requesting the Quest ones, which are the ones in pink.
This is Brett. I do not have a color copy myself, so there's not one here in the room. I don't know how to remedy that, given the constraints that we've already started this discussion. I wish I could. If someone has a suggestion and thought that that might be helpful.
We could email a color copy either to someone on staff or, and, you know, copy Brett now, if that would be helpful.
If I might, this is Commissioner Nelson. I think in our last meeting, we made it clear that we wanted an accurate list of the exchanges. And what I'm hearing is that the list that was sent to us is not accurate, but you're also telling us that the map may not be accurate. And so I think before we can move forward with this, at a minimum, we need an accurate list of exchanges. Now, if you can give us a color map that coincides with that, I think that would be great. But at a minimum, we need an accurate list.
Our understanding is that the list that we gave you is accurate, but we would be happy to respond to any staff questions about the list.
And indeed, that the list is borne out from the map. The problem might be that...
You're breaking up about every other syllable. Perhaps you're on a speaker. I don't know if you can remedy that by speaking closer or more slowly, but why don't you give that a try?
Sure. Is this better?
That's much better. Thank you.
Okay. I think what we are saying is that the list that we have provided to you is accurate and that, in fact, it is borne out by the map. The problem that the miscommunication we might be having right now is that since you are only looking at a black and white rather than a color map, you may be seeing areas that you think are included in our list but are not.
Commissioner Nelson?
Okay, so if the list you sent was accurate, but Mr. Kaneki is telling us that Standing Rock Telecom has not been served, then we're certainly missing a portion of this due process notice.
May I ask, is Standing Rock a rural LEC?
They are a federally designated ETC.
They're a wireless competitive ETC.
Okay. And are they a lifeline-only ETC? What I'm thinking is Nexus is only seeking lifeline funding and not high cost. If we were talking about high cost, then there could be competition between the two companies to serve the same customers and a limited pot of money. That is not the case in lifeline. It all just depends on which carrier the customer chooses. there's no limit or cap on the money.
You're saying if they do not if they only serve Lifeline,
right?
Then there is not a competition.
There's a competition for the customer, but it's not. Either company could go for that customer, and it just increases competitive choice in the marketplace. It doesn't limit the overall amount of funding available.
Commissioner Nelson.
If I could refer everybody to our ASRD that governs this, and I'm looking at 20:10:32:46, and it requires that you provide a copy of the petition to any other telecommunications company that is serving as an eligible telecommunications carrier within the relevant service area. Period.
Thank you. Is there anyone with Nexus that wishes to answer that or respond to it?
If Standing Rock is providing service in the non-rural portions of Quest area, then yes, they should have been served. I can't tell you off the bat if they are offering service in those same areas, but I would propose that we look into that and get back to you, unless, Brett, you know off the top of your head.
Thanks. For the handoff, I called staff to ask about the list of carriers and got this, and I will follow up with staff as to how to find out whether there are any other eligible carriers in those areas as well. I'm not sure as I sit here how I'm going to determine that, but I presume I'll find out from the commission offices.
And if I might, if you ask that question of staff based on the original map, you probably
might be part of the problem.
Yeah, which probably got you the answer you did, but the list has additional exchanges on it, which I think may be what our issue is here.
Thank you.
Sounds like this needs to be deferred to the next commission meeting. If that's
Mr. Chairman, I do have a number of other questions that I'd like to get into today, because of them may require some additional work, some may not.
That's excellent. That'd be a good idea. That way we don't have to worry about going through this process again.
Thank you. And I'll pose these questions either to Mr. Kennecke or anybody from the company that wants to answer these. The first thing I'd like to look at is the accuracy of some statements in the application itself. And in the application, Nexus indicates that you have a, quote, very good relationship, unquote, with public utilities commissions in other states in which you operate. Now, it's my understanding that when the PSC in the state of Georgia attempted to take some steps to prevent fraud in the area of Lifeline, that your response to that commission was to sue them in federal court, as opposed to cooperate with them. Can you fill me in a little bit on whether you, in fact, do have a very good relationship with the commission in all of your other states, or whether that may not be quite true?
Nexus does have a very good relationship with the commissions in the state where it provides service. Nexus has not joined in the CPIA lawsuit involving the new rule in Georgia. Nexus did participate in the rulemaking proceeding, but has not sued that commission. Nexus is an active participant in various efforts to curb waste, fraud, and abuse in the Lifeline program, and I'll name a couple of those efforts for you. One is Nexus was one of the founding ETCs that created the interim duplicate resolution process with the FCC and USAC at its own expense. So it was among the group of carriers that worked to figure out how that process was going to work, which has resulted in millions, many millions of dollars in savings to the fund. Nexus is also participating with the FCC and USAC in another pilot program in to be launched in the state of Michigan to deal with household duplicates. So this is not where, it's not the, they've been termed track one and track two duplicates. So track one is same name, same address. You just, there is no question that's a duplicate. You write them out, and that's been done through this interim duplicate resolution process.
that Nexus helped create about a year and a half ago. The household duplicate issue is where you've got two different people with the same address, but they may be they may constitute two separate households, and it's just that there aren't two separate apartment numbers, and the FCC has been trying to figure out how to deal with those, and so Nexus is participating in right now in a program to figure out how to deal with that, and is also doing that at its own expense. Nexus was one of the first wireless carriers to voluntarily adopt a 60-day non-usage policy. So since the beginning of its wireless operations, it has monitored usage, and if someone wasn't using the phone, they turned them off. This was years and years before this was adopted by the FCC as a rule. And then to get back to the substance of the Georgia rule, we don't disagree with a lot of the other proposals out there to curb waste, fraud, and abuse. We just think that a $5 minimum fee that was adopted by the Georgia Commission was is not really going to the root of the problem, and we think ultimately that the national database is what's really going to solve these problems, and Nexus has supported the creation of a national database since day one, and in fact has been pushing the FCC to create that database.
And I wholeheartedly concur with your last statement. I believe that national database is the answer to a lot of these problems, and I think the sooner that that's operational, the better. And so just so I'm clear, you are not a litigant in the Georgia suit. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. I had gotten some bad information and some research that I'd done earlier this week, and so I appreciate your clarifying that.
In fact, Nexus is working with the Georgia Commission to try to determine ways that we think are better to achieve, to attack basically waste, fraud, and abuse that we think would work better. We do think that adopting a minimum fee is prohibited under Section 332 of the Federal Communications Act, but we're trying to work with the commission.
Thank you. Given your, what you have laid out today, that you're very willing to try to work to eliminate some of the fraud that's involved in this, and I was just shocked when I got the figures from the state of Georgia that they've got, 12% duplicates that they located. In the Wall Street Journal today, there was an article regarding this very issue of improperly claimed telephone subsidies for Lifeline, and that through the course of requiring subscribers to recertify their eligibility, that a large percentage of subscribers have simply dropped off. And it lists the percentage of drop-off for five of the larger carriers, Virgin Mobile, AT&T, Telrite, Tag Mobile, and Verizon, and gives very good numbers on the drop-off of ineligible subscribers. But then it goes on to say that Nexus asked FCC to keep their counts confidential, and when Nexus was contacted for your comment on this, there was no comment. Why would Nexus not be willing to share their numbers publicly?
Well, that's a very good question, and I have a couple of thoughts on that. Number one, I saw the article this morning, and I was very surprised and asked Nexus's president, did they contact you for comment? And he said no. So that is inaccurate. Number two, the article seriously conflates two issues. They conflate non-response with not being eligible. And the non-response rates are seen across the board from big companies like Verizon all the way to companies like Nexus. And there are multiple reasons for that. But what you see is journalists immediately jump to the conclusion that the non-response rate equals not being qualified. The way the annual recertification worked for 2012, which is what these statistics are about, was that The company was to look at a snapshot of its subscriber base as of June 1st, 2012, and then send notices to those subscribers, and they had until the end of 2012 to get a recertification from that consumer. And it's a huge number of consumers to contact and get responses from. And the FCC said that companies could stagger it because they realized it was huge. And so we're, you know, doing this in waves. We're sending out lots of notices. And in the meantime, time is going by. People have moved. Many people who get Lifeline are homeless, or they have transient, they lead transient lives, so they move a lot. So you have those kinds of people who never even got the notice. You know, you may have someone who got a job and therefore no longer qualified, and who said to themselves, why would I bother to respond to this question about still being eligible if I'm not eligible anymore? And then you also just have the problem of a lot of illiteracy, people getting a lot of notices from bill collectors and the like, and frankly don't want to open their mail. And so you have a huge problem with non-response that cannot and should not be confused with, well, they were never eligible in the first place, or they're not eligible now. They may have, you know, lost the phone or, you know, moved on to another carrier. And so, again, all of this will be truly remedied when we get a database. We are more than fully cooperating with all interim efforts to root out waste, fraud, and abuse until that happens.
I certainly identify with your comment about perhaps the individual that wrote the story may or may not have attempted to contact you for comment, but is it accurate that Nexus has requested the FCC to keep your accounts confidential?
Yes, I'm sorry. I got so far into all of the inside guts of the research process, I neglected to answer that question. That is accurate. We are not the only ones. And, you know, these documents include competitively sensitive subscriber counts. And I've spoken to the FCC about it, and they, as far as I know, you know, don't have a problem with keeping those documents confidential.
And what would your reasoning be for making that request?
Because it provides state-specific customer counts, and that is not data that Nexus or a lot of other companies provide in a public manner.
Okay. If I could ask some questions about the actual plans that you have. You indicated in one of your data responses, and it was the response January 8th, that the wireless plans are a $9.25 a month plan, and your Lifeline subsidy covers all of that, so the phones are in fact free, or the subscription is free.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the data response on January 30th, under 3-4, you indicated that Nexus derives additional revenue from the sale of wireline and wireless services to non-Lifeline subscribers. And so my question is, can I subscribe to one of your wireless plans for $9.25 a month?
Yes.
No.
Okay, I heard two answers.
No, you could subscribe and pay the $9.25, but you would not get the Lifeline subsidy.
Understand, but I could in fact get 250 minutes a month for $9.25.
Correct.
Okay, appreciate that. The phones that you're offering, the free phones, are they data capable if someone wants to pay for it?
No, although Nexus is participating in another pilot program with the FCC. It was selected to test how the program might fund broadband services, and so it will soon be launching a limited number of data-capable plans and phones, but right now they don't offer data.
Okay. Again, going to your January 8th data response, there were two confidential exhibits, and I'm not even going to touch Exhibit A because I fully understand why you want to keep that one confidential. But I am puzzled as to why you asked for confidentiality of Exhibit B. Can you explain that to me without divulging whatever it is that you don't want divulged?
So the question that Confidential Exhibit B is responsive to is, does Nexus use mapping software to ensure Lifeline support is only given to customers within the non-rural geographic?
That is correct, yes.
Yeah. So Nexus views that as confidential because it basically explains how Nexus, from an operational standpoint, goes about ensuring that they are only serving customers in their service area, which if you are a brand new startup, is not necessarily an obvious or easy thing to do. If you're a larger company, they understand how to do it, but there are a lot of startup companies entering the Lifeline market, and Nexus does not want to give them a competitive leg up and show them exactly how you would do that. Because obviously, staying within your service area is an important issue in the Lifeline market.
Okay, and I appreciate, and for what it's worth, I like the response. I mean, that made sense to me, and I like that. The last series of questions that I've got go to the study that you referenced in your data response on January 30th, and this is the study by Nicholas Sullivan on subsidized cell phones. On page 5 of that study, it talks about the fact that the FCC, when they initiated Lifeline, had two goals, to reduce rates for residents in all rural areas, which are more expensive to cover, and secondly, to reduce rates for low-income residents everywhere as a matter of health and safety. And then the author went on to posit, and I quote, "Now a third goal should be added, improving the financial situation of the poor." Is that the position of your company? Do you believe that a third goal should be added and that accurately states what that goal should be?
I think that the position, and by the way, just for clarification, I am outside counsel to Nexus, but I'm their national counsel, and I work extensively on a daily basis with the company. It is up to the FCC to determine what the goals of the program should be, but I think I can speak for the company in saying that we believe the program does improve the financial situation of the poor, thereby enabling the poor to get jobs, to retain jobs, and helps with getting them off of other government programs. Nexus views the Lifeline programs, as not a handout, but a hand and a helping hand up.
Okay, given that. In the report, on page 13, the last paragraph, it indicates, and this speaks to what you were just saying, it says as they had surveyed these wireless Lifeline users, it says, quote, "More strikingly, 49% of the total universe said that the cell phone had, quote, improved their financial situation by helping them find or keep work," unquote. And that's what I'm hearing you say. But when I go back to the previous page, page 12, the first paragraph, and it talks about the demographic of the people they surveyed, only 8% were working full-time and 10% part-time. So we've only got 18% that are even working. And yet you're making the contention that this program is a great financial assistance to them. Can you explain that disparity?
Nexus didn't commission the study or write the study, and
you quoted it in your response,
right? I guess my reaction to that is that We continue to work our way out of the worst economy since the Great Depression, and so the improvements are going to be incremental and slower than what we would all like, particularly among the uneducated and people who were already quite poor to begin with.
The last question, I believe the last question that I've got for you, and again from the study, page 13, the first paragraph, and this talks about the folks that were being surveyed, and it indicated that a fifth of these subscribers already had a cell phone, and 71% already had a landline. And so do you see your cell phone offering replacing those or simply giving them a second or third phone?
Well, with respect to landlines, wireless is replacing landline very rapidly amongst all segments of the population. So I think that there's a very good chance, whether or not it's a lifeline phone or not, that wireless phones will just continue to replace landline phones. And then with respect to other cell phones, you know, there may be another cell phone in the house, but what you find among the poor is that they will hold, you know, among the working poor, you'll have people holding multiple jobs, and so the mom and the dad, they each have a phone, which helps them coordinate child care, helps them coordinate, okay, you're coming home from your shift at this time. I'm going to be, my shift time has changed on this other job. And so it helps keep families together. Obviously, we are, working very hard within the company and with the FCC and states to ensure that only one of those funds would be funded by the Lifeline program.
That was the ending I was going to hope you came up with. That's obviously what I'm looking for in all of this. I appreciate your answers to my questions. As you can tell, I've got a great concern that we're actually focusing this program on the folks that it was intended for and nothing more because of the tremendous cost of the program. I think that's all the questions I've got for you and Nexus. I've got one question for staff, Mr. Stephenson. In your comments today, you believe that the company had met all of the legal requirements, and I believe in our rules, we require that in order for an ETC designation to be issued, that we find it, quote, in the public interest, unquote. Do you believe that this meets the public interest?
Thanks for that question, Commissioner Nelson. Yes, I do. I think they mentioned this right away in their very first application that they're serving a segment of the population that that otherwise might not be served. So I do share the same concerns that, you know, that we don't want a business model that, you know, relies heavily on these government funds, but, you know, I do believe there is a place for it as long as we make sure there's not abuse.
Thank you. I think that's all the questions I have at this point, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Wiest.
Just one more question. This is Rolaine Wiest. Do you have a Lifeline form now that has the tribal requirements on it?
Yes.
Good.
So,
Could you file that since we're going to defer this anyway?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other suggestions at this juncture? Seeing none, are there any other questions by the commission? I move to defer TC-13-001 till the next Public Utilities Commission meeting. Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. TC-13-001 is deferred. Next item on today's agenda is TC-13-002 in the matter of the approval of an intercarrier compensation bill and keep amendment to an interconnection agreement between Cellco Partnership, doing business as Verizon Wireless, Cellular Network, doing business as Verizon Wireless, Cellular Incorporated Financial Corporation, doing business as Verizon Wireless, Midwest Wireless Communications, LLC, doing business as Verizon Wireless, Rural Cellular Corporation, Verizon Wireless, VAW, LLC, and WWC Holding Corp, Incorporated, doing business as Verizon Wireless, and Midstate Communications. Verizon, are you representing? Yes.
Good afternoon. Margot Northrup on behalf of Midstate and actually on behalf of the balance of the rural local exchange companies on today's agenda. This is another series of amendments to interconnection agreements similar to what has been filed and approved by this commission previously. We would request that you approve the interconnection agreement.
Thank you. Staff, representing staff today, Ms. Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kristen Edwards for staff. The amendments were properly filed, properly executed, and do not appear to contain any discriminatory provisions. No comments were filed. Staff recommends the commission approve the amendments to the interconnection agreements.
Thank you. Are there any questions by the commission? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, at TC 13-002, move to approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement.
Thank you. Discussion? Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. In TC 13-003, in the matter of the approval of an intercarrier compensation bill and keep amendment to an interconnection agreement between Cellco Partnership, Cellular Incorporated Network Corporation, Cellular Incorporated Financial Corporation, Midwest Wireless Communications, LLC, Rural Cellular Corporation, Verizon Wireless, LLC, doing WWC Holding Corporation, and all doing business as Verizon Wireless, with Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe Telephone Authority. Ms. Northrup.
Thank you again. On behalf of Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe Telephone Authority, we request that you approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement.
Thank you. Is there a discussion? Excuse me, I guess I'm Ms. Edwards. Don't want to skip you.
Thank you, Kristen Edwards, for staff for this docket, as well as the balance of the docket. Staff's position is the same as in the previous docket, and we would recommend approval of the interconnection agreements.
Thank you. Was that plural, interconnection agreements? Are you speaking on all of them?
I'm sorry, the amendment to the interconnection agreement,
okay.
Not plural.
Thank you. Any questions from the commission? Is there a motion?
Move in TC 13-003 that the commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement.
Thank you. Discussion? Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. In TC 13-005, in the matter of approval of an intercarrier comp bill and keep amendment to an interconnection agreement between New Singular Wireless PCS LLC and its commercial mobile radio service operating affiliates doing business as AT&T Mobility and Midstate Communications.
Thank you again, Margot Northrup, on behalf of Midstate Communications. This agreement is nearly identical to the previous agreements. I think the only difference is in paragraph 10, and that's because of the original agreement between the parties. I would ask that you approve the amendment.
Thank you. Ms. Edwards?
Thank you. Staff would, again, recommend approval of the amendment.
Thank you. Questions? Any questions from the commission? Is there a motion? I will move in TC 13-005 that the commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement. Any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. TC 13-006, in the matter of approval of an intercarrier compensation bill and keep amendment to an interconnection agreement between Cellco Partnership, Cellular Incorporated Network Corporation, Cellular Incorporated Financial Corporation, Midwest Wireless Communications, LLC, Rural Cellular Corporation, Verizon Wireless, LLC, and WWC Holding Corporation, all doing business as Verizon Wireless and Venture Communications Cooperative.
Thank you, Margo Northrup. On behalf of Venture Communications, we would request approval of the amendment.
Ms. Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Staff recommends approval of the interconnection or the amendment to the interconnection agreement.
Thank you. Questions by the commission? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, in TC 13-006, move that the commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion? Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hanson votes aye. Motion carries. TC 13-007, in the matter of approval of an intercarrier compensation bill and keep amendment to an interconnection agreement between Celco Partnership, Cellular Incorporated Network Corporation, Cellular Incorporated Financial Corporation, Midwest Wireless Communications, Rural Cellular Corporation, Verizon Wireless, doing business as, and WWC Holding Company, all doing business as Verizon Wireless, and Western Telephone Company. The question before the commission is, shall the commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement? Ms. Northrup.
Thank you, Margo Northrup, on behalf of Western Telephone Company, and we would request that you approve the amendment.
Ms. Edwards.
Thank you. Staff would recommend approval of the amendment to the interconnection agreement.
Questions by commission? Motion?
I move in TC 13-007 that the commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement.
Discussion? Commissioner Fegan?
Both aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hanson votes aye. Motion carries. TC 13-008, in the matter of approval of an intercarrier compensation bill and keep amendment to an interconnection agreement between Celco Partnership, Cellular Incorporated Network Corporation, Cellular Incorporated Financial Corporation, Midwest Wireless Communications, Rural Cellular Corporation, Verizon Wireless, WWC Holding Company, doing business as Verizon Wireless, and West River Telecommunications Cooperative. Ms. Northrup.
Thank you. On behalf of West River Telecommunications Cooperative, we would request approval of the amendment.
Thank you. Ms. Edwards?
Thank you. Staff recommends the commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement.
Thank you. Questions by the commission? Motion?
I move in TC 13-008 that the commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement.
Discussion? Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hanson votes aye. The motion carries. That concludes today's agenda with the exception of announcements. The commission offices will be closed Monday, February 18th, in observance of President's Day. Commissioners will attend the South Dakota State Federation of Labor and Legislative Conference on Thursday, February 21st. Commissioners and staff will meet with representatives of South Dakota Rural Electric Cooperatives on Tuesday, February 26th. The next regularly scheduled commission meeting will be Tuesday, February 26th at 2:30 p.m. A hearing in docket TC 12-040 will be held beginning at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time on Wednesday, February 27th. Commission meetings are scheduled for March 12th and 26th as well. Seeing no further business before the commission, is there a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hanson votes aye. We stand adjourned.